Harvard Medical School Department of Population Medicine at the Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Institute. Her work focuses on utilizing ESP, and that doesn't mean telepathy, but she'll tell you.
Great, thanks very much, Rita. So to jump right in, what I'm planning to discuss, first I'm going to describe the system that Massachusetts uses to automatically identify and submit case reports for notifiable diseases using electronic medical records, which is ESP. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the work that's been done to enhance this electronic reporting to provide longitudinal surveillance for continuum of care, using HIV as an example. And then I'd like to discuss some of our current status and some of the challenges that we're facing, and finally share some preliminary care continuum data for HIV. So first, what is ESP? So it stands for EHR Support for Public Health, and it's a software and architecture that's been built by a group at the Department of Population Medicine at the Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare Institute, and it's designed to extract, analyze, and transmit electronic health data from providers to public health. And I'm not going to talk too much about the details here because Noelle Kokoris is actually going to talk a little bit more about this system in the next presentation. But briefly, how does the system work? So we start with the practice's EMR and all the rich information that's available. The demographics, diagnoses, medications, all that information that's sitting there in EMR data. It gets sent to an ESP server each night that is behind the practice's firewall and compatible with any EHR system. And so if this information meets algorithms that are defined by the ESP team, then a notifiable disease case report is created and securely sent over to the Department of Public Health via HL7 messages and then integrated into Maven. So a couple of advantages to using ESP is first that it reduces a lot of the burden on providers to report information to DPH via case report form, and then also for DPH to follow up with those providers when information's missing. And also there are times where a positive lab result might not be enough to identify a case, and ESP can kind of use this additional information to filter through. So the way this case identification works, if you could think of ESP as a filter. So you have all this information coming in from the EMR data, and then if it meets ESP's criteria, then it will create a case report and send that across securely to DPH, where epidemiologists and public health nurses will review these suspect cases and confirm whether or not they meet our care continuum or the criteria for DPH. So to share an example of what these case detection algorithms look like, this is the HIV case detection algorithm. And you'll notice that there's many different ways where we would identify a patient as an HIV patient. And it's a mixture of positive lab results, diagnosis codes, and medications. And so each of these algorithms are validated via chart review to ensure that there's a high positive predictive value and sensitivity. So basically to make sure that we're getting everything that we want and only what we want. And I just want to note, you know, how does this compare to the digital bridge? And so the digital bridge is meant to cast kind of a wide net, whereas ESP is more targeted and meant to accurately identify and report cases. Also, the digital bridge is for initial case reporting, and ESP is also for initial case reporting, but is also to report data longitudinally, which I'll talk more about. And I think it's important to note that both ESP and the digital bridge can run in parallel, which is what Massachusetts has chosen to do because there are really benefits to each system. So one of the advantages to using ESP and EHR data in general is the information that is sent across with the case. So we have information about demographics, provider information, symptoms, treatment information that is in the EMR data that can be sent right across. And so, you know, as this information is collected with traditional surveillance methods, you know, sometimes these variables can be missing or incomplete. So I wanted to share the different conditions that we've been using ESP to identify. So I just want to note that these diseases are all in various stages of implementation. So some are being reliably reported by all of our partner practices. Others are still in validation, and some are really kind of just in the beginning stages of discussion. And so you'll notice that most of these diseases are acute conditions. However, we've just started to work with chronic diseases and to identify those cases and then to report longitudinally. And so what does this longitudinal case reporting look like? So first we'll report our initial case like we have been for other diseases, including all that supplemental information with EHR. And then we follow these patients throughout their continuum of care in order to monitor disease progression and identify patients that are potentially out of care so we can follow up with them, and also to monitor health outcomes at some of our partner providers. So here's an example of what this prospective surveillance information looks like. So this is for HIV. And so we are planning to get serial lab results, so CD4 labs and HIV viral load tests, which are already coming in through ELR, so this is really supplemental data. But also we're taking a look at HIV care visits, new prescriptions, along with some other things. So I wanted to share some of the challenges that we've faced, and I think it's important to note that some of these challenges are really inherent to the nature of EMR, and others are really more about the challenges of creating this new reporting system. So first, identifying risk factors using EMR. So for example, sexual orientation for most EHR systems is not captured in a structured way and is difficult to capture and send systematically. And then also validation of new data elements. So for example, how do we define an HIV care visit? You know, maybe it's not enough to know that a patient had a visit at our provider. How do we really filter down and know that this is a visit for HIV care? And also our ongoing lab mapping maintenance. So mapping our labs is a little bit of a manual process, to taking a look at how do these labs look in our EHR systems, and what links do they map to that we want to send through our HL7 messages. And then, you know, of course, new labs come out, and our providers change the way the labs are named. So how do we stay on top of that and make sure that things are continually mapped? And then finally, how do we identify the indicators of a patient being in care? So traditionally, we've looked for CD4 and viral load tests. However, if a patient is, if their disease is pretty well controlled, they might not be getting testing at every visit. So, you know, if they are getting antiretroviral prescriptions or if they're seeing their doctor for HIV care, we would still consider them in care. So what are the variables that we want to look for to be able to identify this? So where are we right now with reporting HIV care continuum? So our algorithm has been validated at one multi-site practice and two individual health centers, and it's in progress or planned for a number of other centers. We're in our final stages of testing for those that have been validated, and we expect longitudinal case reporting to begin later this year. So I wanted to share some preliminary care continuum data for HIV. So ESP has the capability to provide population-level aggregate summaries. Again, I'm not going to talk a lot about the details here because I think Noelle's presentation will touch on this. However, for this analysis, we included data from 18 different community health centers in Massachusetts, and also Adria's Health, which is a multi-site ambulatory practice in Massachusetts. And then we identified HIV patients who were in care at one of our partner practices in 2015, and then evaluated what proportion are getting HIV care. So this slide is meant to be kind of an overview of the data that we can get. In the interest of time, I'm not going to spend too much time on it. We can look at a little bit more of the details here. So I wanted to compare what were we finding with ESP with what has been found with traditional surveillance data from Massachusetts. And so we're looking at data from 2014 for the MDPH surveillance data because 2015 hasn't yet been posted, and then 2015 for ESP. So over on the left, we're looking at patients living with HIV or AIDS. And so for Massachusetts, they found about 19,000 patients have been diagnosed with HIV and are living in Massachusetts. So our denominator for ESP is a little bit different, as that's not really a knowable denominator for us. So for ESP, we found about 3,300 patients that were that had evidence of having HIV in 2015 or earlier, and had any encounter with one of our provider practices. So not necessarily an HIV care visit, but you know, they had some sort of contact so that we knew that they are in care at our sites. So then we looked at what proportion were engaged in care. DPH surveillance data showed that about 75% of patients had a viral load or CD4 count in 2014. And for ESP, we expanded that definition a little bit to look for both those lab results as well as a prescription for an HIV medication or an HIV care visit, which you defined as an encounter with an HIV diagnosis. And we found about 91%. So then we took a look at those who were retained in care. So who were getting these lab tests? I think it had to be 3 months apart in at least a 12-month period for DPH, and about 60% were. And then when we took a look at ESP and we added in the medications and HIV visits, we found about 81%. And then finally, we took a look at viral suppression. So both of these were defined as having a viral load of 200 copies per milliliter at their most recent lab result. And our percentages were pretty similar. So I just wanted to note quickly that that the group at the Department of Population Medicine had developed a RiskScape, which is a web-based visualization platform for ESP data, and it provides data updated monthly. And I think Noel will talk more about this as well, but I just wanted to note that we've incorporated some of this continuity of care information. So what I'm showing is for Hep C, actually, but the same kind of information of, you know, how many patients are in care, how many are being treated, how many are being tested, is there kind of in real time and can be filtered by year, age group, race, sex, things like that. So finally, I wanted to close with talking about some of the advantages to coupling surveillance data with EHR data. So there's limitations to each system. So for EHR, as I mentioned, not all data elements that we're interested in are systematically captured in EHR. And so there can be gaps in that, and we either need to find a way to capture that information or to follow up with providers. And then also, we're kind of limited to the care that the patients are getting at our ESP partner sites. So if a patient is getting some of their care at our partner practices but are getting, you know, their lab tests or something like that elsewhere, we won't be able to utilize that information or send that across. However, when we couple that along with traditional surveillance information, we are able to get kind of a clearer picture. And so some of the limitations to traditional surveillance data is, again, I mentioned this, but the burden that is on providers and DPH to report and monitor cases. And then also with the exception to lab results, we can't easily capture care continuum data longitudinally. So if we can kind of combine these systems, I think we get a much clearer picture of care for these cases. Finally, I just wanted to acknowledge and thank everyone who's worked on this project, and I'm happy to take questions if there's time.
And this time we have time for a couple questions. In the interest of time, I'm not going to ask people to make their way to the microphone, but stand up and shout. Questions?
I have a quick question.
Sure.
Mary, stand
up. Oh, okay. I dropped my knitting that way, though.
Sorry.
how did you define pregnancy status?
Yeah. So we have actually a whole algorithm for it, but we use a combination of diagnosis codes, expected delivery date. It's in a whole way that I'm happy to share with you afterwards, if you like. Sure, yeah, absolutely. So it's an open source software that is available, and I'm happy to talk to you more about.
And the other question, you said that you're using the Digital Bridge and the ESP simultaneously.
Yeah.
What difference
is these two technologies? Yeah, that's a good question. And so I touched on this, but I think the Digital Bridge is really meant is kind of take a wide cast a wide shallow net, whereas ESP is able to use a lot more data about about a patient. Look back in their history, and kind of follow them through time. So it's a little bit more targeted, and is able to, be sure that we're making sure that we're accurately identifying patients and reporting them.
Okay.